It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
One-run ball game. Last chance here. It's Ramirez. Fontenot still at first. The pitch to Aramis. There's a drive. Deep left center. Cubs win. They win it. Ramirez. Two-run shot. Oh, baby.
The sweet sounds of Len Casper in a day when Aramis Ramirez was doing his thing on the north side of Chicago. And if you didn't appreciate him then, shame on you. And we will have him here in a second. He's going to join us here on Inside the Clubhouse. Bruce Levine, I'm Ryan McGuffey. The Score Hotline is presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. And tomorrow, Aramis Ramirez will be inducted into the Cubs Hall of Fame, along with former teammate Kerry Wood. And we are pleased to welcome him to the show right now, Bruce.
Aramis, welcome to our show. Congratulations on this great honor, my friend. Tell us how this weekend has gone for you and your family.
Man, it's been a blast so far. Having fun, you know. I know the Cubs lost yesterday. That would make a lot of funny if they would have won. But, you know, we have fun. I got all my family down here, my agent, and looking forward for today and tomorrow.
Aramis, when you go back to that time, I mean, you go back to 2003 when you were acquired, and then, of course, that magical run of 2003 and that entire decade, you guys won some division titles, and there was so much spotlight on the Cubs on the north side, largely in part because of the play that you had at third base, certainly the home runs that you hit at the plate. What was that era like to be a part, to be a Cub, when you guys were on the brink and bringing the fans every day to Wrigley Field prior to this that new regime that took over and got the Cubs to the mountaintop? What was that like for you?
It was always fun to show up and play a baseball game at Wrigley Field, especially those years we were competing, 2007, 8, 9. You know, we were in the pennant race. We won the division back-to-back year, 7 and 8. And just expecting to win. You know, when I got traded over here, I came from the Pirates, and we don't expect to win out there. We were in the rebuild mode. But once I got to Chicago, you know, we made the playoffs that same year, and it was the best time of my life. I mean, play with Moises and Sammy Sosa, two Dominican fellows, two great players, great guys, and I have a blast those years here in Chicago.
Aramis is going into the Cub Hall of Fame tomorrow along with Kerry Wood. Very appropriate, two of the legends of Chicago Cub baseball. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, you mentioned Moises and Sammy. Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about leadership on teams? Because Ryan and I have been talking about leaders and how they can't be invented. They have to be natural leaders. Who were some of the leaders on that team? I think you were.
I was one of the leaders, but not vocal. You know, I like to lead by example. But we have a lot of leaders. I will say D. Lee was one of the top guys on those 07 and 08 years. Earlier, like I said before, it was Sammy, Moises, Maddox. We have a lot of Granomar, Garcia Parra. We have a lot of great guys. But those, especially those 2 years, we made the playoff back-to-back years. I would say Dilly was one of the top guys. Woody, Kerry Wood, our dancer. I was blessed to play with a lot of great teammates, a lot of great guys.
July 23rd, 2003. That's when Aramis Ramirez was traded to the Cubs with Jose Hernandez, and then Kenny Lofton. There was a lot made about Kenny Lofton being the big ticket of that trade because Corey Patterson had gone down with a significant knee injury, and no one really knew a lot about what they were getting at third base. And then you become one of the great third basemen of all time. I think, I told Bruce this before the show, that it's one of the great trades in the history of the Chicago Cubs. Like, it's on the Mount Rushmore for me as one of the significant steals of all time. Players have a hard time answering this question, but I'm going to ask it to you anyway, now that you've been out of the game for a little bit. Do you feel, when you were with the Cubs, that you might have been one of the underrated players in the league? I'm not talking about on the team. I'm talking about in the league. You're a three-time All-Star. You have several Silver Sluggers. You got MVP votes in five or six seasons. Did you feel that you got the respect and the admiration that maybe you deserved in your time here with the Cubs?
I think that I got the respect from the players, from the coaches, from the other teams. I don't know if I got what I deserve from the media. That's up to other guys to answer. But on the field, from the players, my teammates, other players, other coaches, other managers, I got the respect that I deserve. Now, media side, that's not up to me to decide, but I don't know about that.
You know, having been a friend of yours as well as a part of the media that covered you, you didn't go out there and really seek interviews. You always answered questions. You were always available, but you were not one of those guys that blew your own horn or was out there trying to make people recognize you. I think that probably worked against you more than anything else, the fact that you just went about, you just showed up to work every day and did your job.
Exactly. That's a good point. You know, I told friends back in Dominican and even my family, my kids, that, you know, sometimes I didn't smell the flowers. I didn't realize how good I was, and I didn't have as much fun that I should have because I was way too locked in on my job, on the next game. You know, you play 162 games in 180 days, and you don't have a lot of time. And I just concentrate and play the game every single day, being available every single day, and I did my best. And I was an everyday player into my last year when I retired. So I don't have a lot of time to speak about myself. I just went about my business and try to do my job.
Well, here's how good you were. Okay, I'm gonna throw a few names out there, and this is the list that you're on when you talk about the Chicago Cubs: Sammy Sosa, Ernie Banks, Billy Williams, Ron Santo, Ryan Sandberg, Anthony Rizzo, Aramis Ramirez. Those are the top seven home run hitters of all time for the Chicago Cubs. You're on that list with those names. Have you been able to appreciate your career? You talked about not being able to smell the flowers when you were in it. Have you been able to at least smell them a little bit now that you've been away from the game?
I am now. My friends let me know. My family let me know. And now with this honor of being the Cubs Hall of Fame, they are letting me know too how good I was, and they appreciate what I did for them, and I'm grateful for that.
All right, Ryan, I'm going to tell you this about Aramis.
Okay.
He liked to play baseball, but he loves the NBA.
Oh, here we go.
Okay. Aramis, go ahead. Take it. Take the ball and run from there. Are you still a huge NBA fan?
Huge. Huge NBA fan. I mean, I got a place in Miami, and I look at the Heat schedule, and when they home, I try to be there and go to a few games.
Who's your if you're starting a team, you got one pick of a current NBA player, who are you taking?
Oof, that's a great question, man. I'll probably take Jason Tatum.
Okay. All right.
That's awesome.
NBA champion Jason Tatum. That's a pretty good pick.
Aramis, tomorrow is your day with Kerry Wood. How much are you looking forward to that? And as you said, a new appreciation just from you about what your career was like, and then seeing people showing the love for you that you weren't always necessarily feeling while you were a player?
Looking forward to it, man. I have been. Since they told me I was going to be a Cubs Hall of Fame, looking forward to this day for a few months now, since I was in the Cubs convention. And I'm sure it's going to be a blast. It's going to be a really fun time. My kids all are here, my family, my wife, and my mom, my two sisters, my my agent that is a good friend, Paul Kinzer, and they all having a blast. We're gonna have a blast tomorrow, and like I said before, you know, it's an honor, and that they appreciate what I did for them, and I love this city, and I'm gonna be part of a club for life now.
Your agent, Paul Kinzer, who's also a good friend of mine, said that Aramis Ramirez is an RBI machine. Anytime men are on base, they're going to be driven in. Your career reflects that. Can you say that the game changed for you when men were on base? Was there another level that you were able to go to?
Yeah. For some reason, sometimes I try to explain it, but I can't. For some reason, I took my game to another level when I had my scoring position. I thought it was my responsibility. It was part of my job to drive me runs. You know, since I signed a professional contract, I was always a meter of the order type of guy, you know, 3, 4, 5. So I take pride on it, and I try to do my job, drive me runs, and I think I did it for a while, you know?
Yeah, you did.
You did okay. You drove in 1,011 runs with runners in scoring position. You hit .295 with an .888 OPS. I think that you did your job.
You know you'd be making $35 million a year right now, right?
I can't complain. I think I did well on my time.
Okay. That's it, buddy. Thank you so much, Ryan, and I appreciate it.
Congratulations.
I look forward to being there with you tomorrow as you go into the Cub Hall of Fame. Enjoy the weekend, my friend.
Appreciate it, and I'm looking forward to seeing you guys tomorrow.
All right. Thanks, Aramis Ramirez. The great Aramis Ramirez. We are pleased to have been joined by him here on Inside the Clubhouse. And some good things right there, Bruce, that came out of that.
You asked him a great question. He gave you a great answer right away. You know, I mean, there was stuff that he revealed in our conversation here that people probably never heard Aramis talk about. Because, again, he never sought attention through the media. At the same time, like a lot of players, you know, because there was Sammy Sosa and Kerry Wood and other guys with quote unquote brighter stars, you know, there was a little resentment about it. Not about the players, but about the fact that, hey, I'm as important as any of these guys in winning games. I'm not getting that recognition.
It's definitely interesting to see how if Aramis Ramirez played today, how that would change. Because you got to remember, when he was at his peak with the Cubs, there was no Twitter. Social media was non-existent. We barely had phones that had cameras on them. And so think you talk about players love their profiles now, and they can control some of their own profiles just by what they put on their own phones and their own platforms. There was no platform. The only platform Aramis Ramirez had was going out and playing third base for the Chicago Cubs on a day-in, day-out basis. And it goes into what we were talking about prior to him joining us in leadership. Leaders aren't always going to be the rah-rah vocal guy. They're going to be the guy that plays 150 games a season, plays gold glove caliber defense, drives in 90 to 100 runs, comes through in the clutch, goes about his business, and that's his leadership. That's Paul Konerko-esque.
The other side of town, this exact guy was Maglio Ordóñez.
Yep.
Okay. Never heard much from him. Never interviewed a lot. Never sought a lot of attention. Just went out there and helped beat your brains out. Had a long career. But, you know, when they talk about the great White Sox players, people always leave him out.
Yeah.
But he's in the top 10. He's in the top 10 of best White Sox players ever. Okay?
Oh, look at it. I mean, just go back and look at some. And that's what I love, that the Cubs started a Hall of Fame. I think the South Side should do that. You don't need to. Not every player is retired jersey caliber, right? That's a different caliber of a player. But for those players, for what they did, how they represented themselves, and what their stat line showed for almost a decade on the North Side, I'm glad Aramis Ramirez gets the honor of being recognized forever and a chance to walk out in front of the Wrigley Field crowd and feel those and smell those flowers that he said he didn't smell.
Well, it's brilliant marketing by the Cubs, okay, because they bring in the guys that were important to different eras, and they also show them the love again, okay? So, again, that is a part of the family of being a Cub. The White Sox probably need to pick that up a little bit. Brooks Boyer does a terrific job of marketing the White Sox, but some of that level, you know, it could be on more on this. You know, the Hall of Fame would be good. So, again, what the Cubs do, bringing these guys in, having that area now, you know, to where the statues are for their Hall of Famers, having these guys appreciated. It's great. And the Sox do a really good job of bringing back their old players as well. But, mm-hmm. you know, glorifying them like this, probably a really good idea.
And look, they have an opportunity. They have a new network starting next year. It's the 20th anniversary of the 2005 team, and you have Sox Fest coming back. Yeah. I mean, maybe that's where you start it. You have this kind of it's all handed. It's a gift right there. There's plenty of guys. I mean, you can induct the entire 2005 team, but look, there's a lot of guys that did not win a World Series in this town on the South Side that came through the South Side of Chicago who were great players. You mentioned one of them in Magleer Ordóñez.
Right. And again, having star players to be able to market, it's pretty cool. I mean, the Chicago Cubs during the John McDonough era of marketing had Sammy Sosa for 10 years and nothing else, right? Mm-hmm. So they marketed that, you know.
Brilliant.
Come out, Sammy's going to hit two home runs, Cubs are going to lose 9-7, but you're going to have a great time. He's going to pay tribute to you guys. Every time he runs out there, he's going to run out every ground ball. It's going to be fun for you and your family at the game.
And that's why I for one, am infuriated. Like, Sammy should be back. I know they want certain things to happen, but, like, Barry Bonds is getting inducted into Hall of Fames all over the place, except for Cooperstown. If he can be welcomed back in Pittsburgh and San Francisco, be in the game, Sammy Sosa is as responsible for Wrigleyville as any player that's ever worn a Cub uniform. Period. I'm talking about current modern day Wrigleyville. If you go back to 19, and Bruce, you can say that, you go back to the mid-90s, Wrigleyville was a place you got in and you got out of. There was a couple of bars, Bernie's, just a few of them, and that was it. Murphy's and Bernie's.
It takes two to tango, Ryan.
It does.
And that means the Cubs would like to hear some things from Sammy, and I think there are some Cub fans that, you know, would like to also. But again, there's no denying how popular he was during the time he was there.
Yeah, we could kick the can on this one for a while because it's a yearly debate about Sammy Sosa. We got to hit a break. We have 1962 Met Craig Anderson coming up because the Chicago White Sox are just days away from becoming the all-time worst team in the history of the game. It's hard for me to say. Think about that. My mouth is bleeding from the inside out just trying to say those words. He's Bruce Levine. I'm Ryan McGuffey. This is Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Crowd here at Fenway rising to their feet. Here's the 0-2 pitch. Chucky Robinson to right field, backing up his Abreu, and that's the ball game.
The White Sox lose their 110th game last night, 3-1 at Fenway Park in Boston. The highlight, compliments of my friends over at NBC Sports Chicago. The White Sox, Bruce, have to have a winning record the rest of the way to avoid the 1962 Mets 120 loss season of 1962. So let's be honest. They've won 5 games in the second half. The idea that they're going to have to win 11 to not be that team, it's just not going to happen. So
let's get to our next guest.
We go to the Score Hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book, and that's where we are pleased to be joined by a member from that 1962 Mets team, Craig Anderson, who was a pitcher on that expansion team in New York, or back in New York in 1962. And Craig, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Craig,
good to hear from you.
Yes. Craig, so we'll take you back to 1962. It's September of that year, and you guys are not trying to break a record. No one's telling you about a broken record, but you know that you are heading toward what is the worst record in baseball. What was that time like as a New York Met, an expansion team in their first year, the first time a team in the National League was back in New York since the Dodgers and the Giants had left in 1958? What was the vibe like? What was it? What did it feel like back then?
Well, that's a long way ago, but I do remember that we were not thinking about the most losses in the league at that time. I don't think the records jumped out. I mean, I don't know what the record was before that, but there was one that they didn't count. I think they were called the Spiders back in the 1800s.
Yep.
So I don't know what the loss record was at that time. But at that time, I think we were just trying to win games, and we weren't really looking at records or, you know, that's how I remember it anyway. We were just trying to win more games before the season ended. And so the record of 120 wasn't on our mind at that time.
But
we were trying to win more games.
Of course. And, you know, the one big glaring difference between the 1962 Mets and the 2024 White Sox is that you guys were an expansion team. I mean, let's be honest, like that's a different,
that's right.
You know exactly who you are. You're building your team with a bunch of young players. You were 23 at the time, but this is a lot different. The White Sox have the most expensive payroll in the American League Central as we currently sit here today, which is crazy. I mean, that's an after effect of spending money the last few years. I thought about that.
That's right. We had a lot of older players for the most part. We did have big name players, though, which kind of was good in a way because the fans in New York knew them and were able to, associate with a Gil Hodges and a Richie Ashburn.
Casey Stang was your manager, I believe, too. So
let me just throw this at you. That Spider record of 134, I don't think that was wiped out yet. And I don't think that we were being told that we're going to have the worst ever, because I don't remember hearing that. But I know at the end of the season, after everything over, then we were credited with the worst record ever, and they threw out that other one. So as you asked me in that time frame, I don't think that we were thinking about having the most losses at that time.
Craig Anderson, our guest from the 62 Mets, joining us on Inside the Clubhouse, talk a little bit about the comparisons between the White Sox and the Mets. And Craig, when you you look back at that time, you played for one of the greatest people, characters, Hall of Fame managers in history in Casey Stengel. What was your recollection of playing for Casey, and did the players get just as big a kick out of him as the media and the fans as to his particular language, which was called Stengelese back then?
Yeah, you got it. I tell you what, we were all thrilled to have him, and I think even the older players, other than the ones that maybe were on the Yankees, we were looking forward to meeting him, hearing from him, and playing for him in the spring. And I was too. I had met him one time when I was in high school briefly, but he didn't. That wasn't a big deal. But all the guys in the clubhouse were anxious to hear from him that day. And as I told another guy in an interview, Stengelese entered into the history of the 62 Mets on that day when we first met him in the clubhouse. So what happened was he came out and he talked a little bit about how he's looking forward to doing coaching us and everything. Gave us a little rundown on some of the really top-notch players in the room, and he could associate with the Hodges and the Ashburns and names. And then after he got through talking, he announced to the team, "All right," he said, "I want everybody in the room now to line up according to size." alphabetically according to size. Well, that just broke the room up, and we all kind of chuckled and sort of, and I looked, and he didn't quite understand why we were laughing at him, but that was the beginning of what I call Stengelese has made it into the locker room. And so that's a good start how we ever remember it. And, of course, there were many more after that, but that's what all of us remember, and the press remembers it too. So that became a little password for our year there as a clue word that that's who we were. But that we weren't thinking of 120 losses at that time. Not at all. Not at all.
It certainly.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it certainly seems like the legend of the 1962 Mets has grown as years have gone by. That it's always a record that people refer to, like, oh, well, the 1962 Mets are the worst, you know, have the most losses in the history of baseball.
Yeah.
And here we are in Chicago. That record's about to be broken. It's a weird question. Like, is there a badge of honor with that? Or is there like a 1972 Dolphins pop the champagne that we're no longer associated with this?
I think that in the long run, and Jay Hook and I both said the same thing, that we really don't want them to break the record. I wouldn't want to wish that them to break the record. I wouldn't want to tell a player, I hope you lose a lot of games, like Anthony Young, who broke my losing record. I that's how I felt the team was not concerned about that, and I felt the same way. So we just played it out. But, the big difference was that the New York Mets fans, 90-some thousand of them came out to see us, 900-some thousand of us came out to see us play all year long and never gave up on us. We never gave up on them or the team or New York. We were treated as about as well as you could be treated for losing that many games. And I think I left New York with a better feeling than probably most teams who lose that many games. And the players over the years I've talked to still felt that was a special moment in our careers, even though we were losing players and teams. But the Met fans stuck with us, and the players stuck with the Met fans. And so it could have been a lot worse than it was. And the other thing is Stengel stuck with us too. And he kind of kept his press people in his little room where they love to go anyway. And so after that, most ever the games, the press was up in the upper office and we were down in the lower locker room. And believe me, the writers were super guys. They were pros. There was everybody had close friends and some of the reporters. They trusted them. They talked to them. And that's how I think the whole season was. We really respected those guys as much as we did Casey Stengel too.
Craig, you just hit on something that is, resonates with me, and that is when Ozzie Guillen was the manager of the Chicago White Sox when they won the World Series for the first time in almost 90 years, he would talk to the media for an hour before the game, and all the players would say then and later on that he took all the pressure off of them because of mm-hmm. the fact that he filled up every reporter's notebook, every microphone. He satisfied the media to the point where the players were left alone. What you're saying is maybe what managers have to do for teams, and that is whatever that way they can, take the pressure off of the players, because it had to hurt every day knowing going in there, you were going to lose almost every game.
Right. I will stand up for the team all the way from first guy to last guy that everybody tried every day to win games. There was never, ever an incident about not trying, not hustling. And I think the fans in New York had something to do with that. Casey had something to do with that. And we had a lot of professional older guys who stuck with it, and we all kind of blended together and just did the best we could under the circumstances. And I stick to that to this day. I'm glad to hear that about the White Sox. I didn't know that. One thing we didn't mention here, in my personal opinion, about the White Sox this year, there's a lot of missing players. And I knew them because they play the Rays, and we follow them, in the American League. And they really broke their team down. Now, I'm mad at the Rays right now because they just broke theirs down. I thought too soon, you know, before they're still in the running, and then they traded nine players or something away. That's how I feel about it, though, that the manager is a key part to keeping the players, you know, in the program to go all the way. Yes, I agree.
Craig, thank you so much for joining Ryan and myself today on Inside the Clubhouse. And the final thing is you have a great connection to Illinois and Chicagoans. You were a graduate of SIU Carbondale, like myself and your wife.
That's right.
And you're also a third cousin of our friend who is going into the Hall of Fame. Your cousin is Doug Collins.
Doug.
So he's beloved here. And congratulations to you, your family, and him for that.
Thank you.
We're looking forward to him going in here very soon. Have a great day, and thanks so much for joining us.
Appreciate
today.
You.
I will, and go White Sox. Let's see if they can make a marvelous finish here.
Thanks.
I don't know how you guys feel about it, but we're going to go. We'll go till it's on. I got all the games right here in front of me.
Oh, right, well, your lips
to
God's ears,
the
my
Mets
friend.
Played. Yeah, I got it. So thank you very much for including me, and I will look forward to seeing what happens.
Thank you, Craig.
You. Nice talking to you, too.
Thanks, Craig.
Very much. Okay, bye-bye.
Oh, that was good stuff. I want to talk about that on the other side of the break as we get down the stretch here of hit and run, Bruce Levine, Ryan McGuffey, and of course...
Hit and run's tomorrow.
Or not hit and run. Inside the Clubhouse. I don't want to do hit and run. It's not with you. It is with you.
I think hit and run, that's a great
Look,
show
there
every
it is.
Sunday.
There it is. Let's see.
With
10,
Spiegs, Matt Spiegel.
10:41. 1 hour, 41
might
minutes,
be,
Bruce.
It might be over with now with the
it
NFL.
It is. Kangaroo Court. I just got fined. Kangaroo Court. I have the wrong show. All right. That's because the Bears are on my mind.
We'll see what we can do to get
you. Craig got me all flustered.
We'll try
to
get you transferred to that show.
Craig, the one that doesn't exist. Craig got me flustered with the Go White Sox chant. But before Chicago takes on Tennessee, tune in tomorrow morning from 9 to noon, not hit and run, for your local Ford dealers pregame show right here on 670 The Score, presented by Busey Bank and Aurelio's. Join Mully, Olin Kreutz, Patrick Manley as they'll get you set for the game. And then immediately following the game, Mully, Olin, and Manley will have instant reaction on the Great Clips postgame show presented by Wonderverse that will stream exclusively this week on the Score's YouTube and Twitch channels due to the Cubs game. He's Bruce Levine. I'm Ryan McGuffey. We'll wrap things up next on Inside the Clubhouse on the 670 The Score. Back to wrap things up here on Inside the Clubhouse. I'm Ryan McGuffey. He's Bruce Levine. Thanks for all the texts. Very welcoming on the text line, Bruce, at least today. We'll see what happens
in the
coming
weeks. I told you, anything that's not me, they're going
to
like.
Well, yeah, we can always flip. It's nice to welcome.
And I just want to, I want to throw some accolades to my co-host, David Hall, who has done this show for a long time with me. And who knows down the line what's going to be for you and I. But it's been so fantastic to work with him, and I will miss him here. But I'm thrilled to have you as my co-host, and just hopefully everybody's going to enjoy our broadcasts every Saturday.
Yeah, it's a blast. And coming from a Northwest Indiana guy and David Haw, handing it off to a guy who grew up there in the same roots is a lot of fun. David's a good friend of mine, so I appreciate being in this seat. So question for you, Bruce, before we get going here, and you can catch Bruce all day. The Cubs play at 1:20 at Wrigley Field. He'll be on Marquee Network. He'll be doing his stuff here on 670 The Score pregame show. But Aaron Judge and Shohei Ohtani, we can't do a show and not talk about these two guys because they're historic. They're both having historic seasons again. Ohtani homered last night. He's in the 45-45 club. He's got 46 stolen bases. I firmly believe he's going to get to 50-50. But if you had to pick one of the two players to sign as a free agent, start a franchise with, however you want to label it, is it Aaron Judge or is it Shohei Ohtani?
So I asked counsel this yesterday after the media scrum. We always sit and talk to him and, you know, BS for a while. And I said, which one? He goes, well, you know, Ohtani pitches. I said, he doesn't pitch.
Right.
He said, well, he's going to pitch. I said, how do you know?
True.
He goes, well... He's been a great pitcher, and he's coming back from Tommy John. He's going to pitch. I said, how do you know? So, you know, he automatically hates me like most of them. And it's – but I don't – I think it's just based on him being a hitter as opposed to him being a hitter and a pitcher and then Judge. Most people would say Otani because he's younger and he steals bases. I'd prefer Judge. I think he's more intimidating in the middle of the lineup rather than Otani near the top. So I like Judge.
Wow. If you ask me this question 10 times, I'm probably 60-40 on my answer. But I'll go Otani. The dual threat that we don't know about down the, like the idea that he could be a closer as well if he comes back and shuts people down. We don't know. But he is so
if my mom wore pants, she wouldn't be my mom, right?
I hope your mom wore pants at some point, but Shohei Otani, I think it's a different type of presence in the batter's box. I mean, Aaron Judge is just he's a beast. I don't know how anybody pitches to that guy, but Otani from the left side, I think age does play into it in a little. I mean, you're talking about less than 2 years here, and a guy that played a ton of baseball overseas, a ton. So
there's no right answer, no wrong answer.
MVP.
Right. But I love watching both of them for different reasons. I like the fact that Judge plays the field, even though he's not.
I do.
He's not Willie Mays or Mickey Mantle or even PCA defensively, but. I like the ball player being out there, so that's why I go with him.
And he's not just playing in the he's playing center field.
I know it's crazy.
That 6'7", 282, and he's playing center field.
He's good, but he's not fantastic there. He's not going to cover.
He's not Eloy Jimenez in left field though. I couldn't get through a show without saying Eloy Jimenez.
No, well, he usually plays all the game the next day.
And he hustles. So
nothing against Eloy, very fine guy, but. It's a really good argument. It's a good conversation you're having it with your friends or sitting there at the bar with somebody because you can argue it both ways. But I don't believe he should ever pitch again. I don't see any purpose for it.
Me either.
I worry about that he could ruin his arm to the point where he couldn't hold a bat, you know, after a Tommy John surgery here. So, you know, call me Mr. The Glasses. Not only half full, but it's I can't see the glass. You know, that's the type of guy I am sometimes. But Brian, you know, again, I would leave him away from being a pitcher again. I think it's too greedy.
Yes or no on both questions, real quick. Will Aaron Judge hit 60?
Yes.
Will Otani get to 50-50?
Most certainly.
My goodness, that's amazing.
How about you?
Yes and yes. I think that's awesome. The fact that we're having that type of season in September, we're not having it here in Chicago, but baseball gets those two guys.
There is a slump going on. It's been a number of games that Judge hasn't homered.
Well,
so
the Cubs play in just a shade under 3 hours here, so that might change.
Break here this weekend, but hitting a homer at Wrigley or a great home run hitter, pretty cool.
We thank all our guests, Craig Anderson, the great Aramis Ramirez. This has been a blast on my maiden voyage here on Inside the Clubhouse. I thank Bruce Levine. All the calls, all the text. Everybody for Inside the Clubhouse joining us. And next week, we'll be back, Bruce, you and I, doing it again, baby.
I know you'll be here.
That's a good point. You know, who knows? We're all day to day. Thanks to everybody here at The Score for welcoming me in. And we'll see you guys next week on Inside the Clubhouse.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them? Yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.